As a Zingerman's co-founder, Ari Weinzweig is one of Michigan's best-known food entrepreneurs. But like everyone else in the restaurant business these days, Ari finds himself up against one very big problem: finding enough staff.
People who work in our organization have been awesome about helping and working extra and whatever, but at some point it becomes pushing people beyond where we want to push and where they want to be pushed.
The brand's beloved Roadhouse on Ann Arbor's west side will be going dark on Tuesdays to deal with the labor shortage.
If you don't have enough people, at some point it just becomes untenable.
So what is going to bring workers back on the job? Some business owners are hoping that the end of federal pandemic unemployment assistance this week will do the trick. But like you'll hear today, it's a little more complicated than that. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Everywhere you look, there are eateries, from fast food to fine dining, with help wanted signs in the windows. More than 400,000 Michiganders are still collecting federal pandemic unemployment checks. So, will cutting those benefits get the businesses the workers they need? And what's that going to mean for people losing their assistance?
Without a doubt, you will find somebody for whom it's not a catastrophic thing and they've been waiting to go back to work. Without a doubt, you will find someone who it's a catastrophic thing and they don't know how they're going to eat. And that's always the question when we're thinking about policy, which is how do we balance the two?
That's one of our favorite economists, University of Michigan professor Betsy Stevenson. She served as an economic advisor to President Barack Obama and is now at the U of M Ford School of Public Policy.
You know, I think that the view is that the pandemic is enough under control and that states have enough resources that they should be able to get many of these people back to work that were relying on benefits. But let's be clear, there are going to be people who don't get access to benefits, who aren't able to go back to work yet, or who aren't able to find work yet. And, you know, it's a deeply unfair system that often it's our most vulnerable workers, the ones who earn the lowest wages, that we exclude from the program.
Would you expect to see fewer help wanted signs and fewer positions posted as we get to this week in which the federal benefits are ending, either because people choose to return or out of necessity?
Well, look, there's two things that are going to happen. There are going to be some people who choose to return to work because they have to, right? And they've lost their benefits. And there are going to be many other people for whom their family income, their household income falls and they cut their spending quite dramatically. Not only is that a hardship for them, but that means businesses aren't getting that spending. Because they're not getting that spending, they may not need to hire as many people. So there are two effects on employment. And I do not think that this is necessarily, we're going to see, you know, 7 million people hired because 7 million people lost benefits. In fact, I assure you that we will not see 7 million people hired in the month of September with benefits having ended. And so the real question is, you know, how many additional people go back to work? And is it worth the hardship that others are going to experience to have given them that incentive to get back to work? You know, we get a few hundred thousand more people back to work, but there are millions who aren't able to put food on the table. I think we have to ask ourselves whether we thought that trade-off was worth it.
What do you think some of the major shifts might be in work, or maybe, I guess, even our work cultures because of this in COVID? I feel like I started this pandemic with an awful lot of assumptions that, well, you know, healthcare would surely reopen as a topic. That hasn't necessarily been the case. What else is on your mind about what might be different?
So I think there's been an overemphasis that unemployment insurance is what's kept people out of the labor force and kept people from responding to all the help wanted signs. You know, what I see having happened is really a sort of broad rethinking and reshuffling. So we do see quits at, you know, pretty high rates, very unusual rates for coming out of a recession, and even higher in many industries than where quits were prior to the pandemic. People who are quitting are not getting unemployment insurance. So this isn't about unemployment insurance. This is about people saying, wait, this job has changed, or I've been forced to really look at this job and this job is not for me.
Do you think it has more to do with the availability of more positions right now? Or again, just the reality checks?
Look, if you're looking out there and you're seeing almost 11 million job openings, it's definitely a time to think, is this a job for me? And should I be applying for other jobs? Should I be looking to do something different? Because there's a lot of opportunities out there. So it's not surprising to me that many people are taking those opportunities. They're rethinking what they want to do. We're seeing a large number of people making shifts between the industries and occupations that they work in. But I think it's, we also need to realize that American households built up a lot of savings. So there's been a lot of emphasis on this is about unemployment insurance. Unemployment insurance meant that people didn't go back to work. People had built a lot of savings during the pandemic, not just because of unemployment insurance, but they got stimulus payments from the government. Many households kept working. You know, there was a lot of demand, even for lower wage workers, essential workers, who felt like, I've got to keep working. How else am I going to keep earning? And then they got some stimulus payments from the government. They were able to build a little bit of savings. Those cushions have given people some freedom. And I think that freedom is what's allowing people to say, wait, maybe I don't want to do this job where I'm poorly treated or where there's not the benefits I want or there's not the flexibility I want or where the pay just doesn't compensate me for the really harsh working conditions. And I do think you're seeing people who are looking for something that's going to be a little bit safer and perhaps a little bit more pleasant than I think what's happened to service work over the pandemic, which is it's become more dangerous. And people, service workers got COVID, they get exposed to COVID. And frankly, they've been subject to a lot of abuse. Our national argument over whether we should mask, whether we should vaccinate, how we should treat people. Our service workers have been the frontline soldiers in that battle.
And it's let them in for a lot of verbal abuse.
Exactly. You know, economists expect that if you make a job worse, then fewer people want to do it. And that puts upward pressure on the wages. Exactly what we're seeing in service work. We made it worse, and now we're going to pay for it.
Quick pause here. When we come back, Betsy's going to talk about whether employers have really received the gospel of the happy workplace through the pandemic. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Do you think that employers, by and large, have seen the light on unhappy workforces? I mean, whenever I feel like there's been several variations on a story where people say, I cannot get people to apply no matter what I pay. How much of that do you think is situational is that what it looks like when wages are forced upward by market conditions?
Well, you know, I will tell you what I hear more is I can't get people to apply, and then you ask how much did you raise the wage? And I mean, you hear a lot from companies that didn't raise the wage that they weren't able to hire. And the ones who did raise the wage found it a bit easier to hire. You know, I do think that there's were companies out there that thought this was temporary, that they should hold the line on wages, and that, you know, next month or in the summer, they'll be able to get away with paying less. And I don't think that that's right. So I think they're going to have to adjust to the fact that there just are not a lot of jobs that people are going to be willing to do for $9, $10 an hour anymore. And we did see some wage compression, which is different from just wages going up. What we're seeing is wages at the bottom going up, I think somewhat disproportionately. And, you know, it's been a long time coming since we've seen that. What we've been mostly seeing is wages at the top rising with no movement on wages at the bottom. And we're, you know, seeing that growing inequality. I think the pandemic forced some wage compression, and that's probably a really good thing for the United States.
I wanted to ask you about some shifts in the overall economy, too. America has had a service-based, a strong service-based component to its economy for decades. And we talk in broad swaths about America and Michigan not making as many things anymore. But just prior to the pandemic, the gig economy was going gangbusters. And during the pandemic, we saw many of those services and startups pick up a bit. What do you think we'll talk about when we talk about how the components of our economy changed in this time?
You know, the U.S. is a service-based economy. More than 80% of our private sector jobs are in the service sector. I think what was really startling for this particular recession is we've never had a service sector-led recession before. If you go back to, you know, the 2007 to 2009 recession, employment in the goods-producing sector declined by 16%, and it hadn't fully returned to pre-recession levels as of February 2020, right before the pandemic hit. In contrast, there was only a 4% decline in employment in the service sector in that recession. And by 2012, we had all the service sector jobs back, and it kept growing for, you know, the next 9 years. That's where most of our growth was. If you look at this recession, it was employment in the service sector that declined by 16%. So that is really, really unusual. That's why we saw so many jobs lost by women. That's why we saw so many jobs lost by minorities, is minorities and women disproportionately work in that service sector. That service sector is the majority of jobs, but it is also where more women are relative to men and more, you know, minorities are relative to whites, particularly in the lower paid jobs. I think if you're asking how did the economy forever shift? Well, you know, I think the biggest thing was the change in how we use technology and how that technology will crowd out some service jobs. You know, we changed how we travel for business. I don't think that's ever going back to what it was prior to the pandemic. I think it was on a very, very slow path to changing forever prior to the pandemic. And the pandemic was like, you know, put it on the high speed train. And so, you know, there's now many meetings you would do by Zoom rather than getting on a plane. And I think we would have gotten there by 2030 without the pandemic, but we're there now in 2021. And that's just a pretty tough adjustment to the airline industry, to the hotel industry, even to thinking about dining, because so much of dining that is around these centers where you have a lot of business travelers coming in depend on that business travel. I think that's really changed. I think people will work from home a lot, and that will also change again, like where we want businesses to be, where we want restaurants to be. You know, if you typically were in your office, you know, from dawn to dusk, then you wanted, you know, services right around your office, like your dry cleaner there, so you could pick up and drop off when they were open, you know, maybe on your lunch break. If you're working from home 3 days a week, we don't need as much dry cleaning. And maybe you're just as happy if your dry cleaner's in your home neighborhood rather than your work neighborhood. So I do think there's still a lot of shakeup to happen because we haven't gotten people back in the office. And we're starting to realize that, you know, the great return to the office that we thought might happen this fall, I think is not going to happen quite as fully as people might have been expecting. And the same thing's true with a sort of the return to business travel, I think is going to be slower to recover. And I do think these things are sort of permanently changed in a way that will mean that we don't really go back to pre-pandemic ways of doing things.
Well, likewise, are there any indicators, like if I were to ask you this question, like when's the right time? We started out talking about federal benefits. If I were to ask you when's the right time to end it, are you looking at any different indicators than you used to, given all those shifts that you were just talking about?
Well, when I was thinking about these federal benefits, I want to be clear. I think it's the right time to end an extra $300 a week. The idea of the $300 a week was that we normally only give people 25 to 50% of their pay in unemployment insurance. It's supposed to be just enough to make sure you can pay the rent and eat. And during COVID, we really wanted people to stay home. And we thought, boy, that's going to be a hardship. We want to give some people something closer to 100% of their pay. And that's why those extra payments were added on. I think we're done with that. But the idea that we're going to have a system where we don't provide unemployment insurance to part-time low-wage workers or to gig workers or to the self-employed, I just don't think that's a sustainable permanent model. So I don't think it's about extending these benefits for another 6 months or 12 months or 6 weeks. I really think it's about redesigning our unemployment insurance system so that we cover more workers, including those workers who are gig workers and independent contractors and self-employed.
And that's the Stateside podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside shows whenever you want to stream them at michiganradio.org. We hope that wherever you listen, you can rate us and leave us a review. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be right back in your feeds tomorrow.